Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. And hey, I am just going to issue a blanket spoiler alert for the rest of Radio Boston right now. Spoiler alert, because we are going to talk about Little Women, directed by Greta Gerwig, which came out last week for the rest of the show today. And we will talk plotline, people. So if you haven't seen the film, heads up. The movie, which is based on the 1868 novel by Louisa May Alcott, has a lot of ties to Massachusetts, including being set and actually filmed here, unlike some of the previous film adaptations. So we wanted to take some time to talk about the movie and how it holds up to Alcott's original story. Joining me now is Jan Turnquist. She's the executive director of Louisa May Alcott's Orchard House. Welcome, Jan.
Thank you.
And also with us is a Little Women fan, Camille Washington. She hosts the culture podcast, The Unfriendly Black Hotties. Welcome, Camille.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
We want you to join us, too. Have you seen the new Little Women movie, or do you plan to? What do you make of it? Are you a Louisa May Alcott super fan, or is this new film adaptation maybe making you interested for the first time? Call us. Share your thoughts about the movie, the story, and what it's meant to you. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Camille, you've loved the story of Little Women since you were a little girl.
Yeah, so I first read Little Women when I was like 6 or 7 years old. I received a copy of the book from my best friend, Elizabeth Goff, who was moving across the country, and I started reading this book at a very young age. So from the ages of like 7 to 11, it was like my seminal guiding text for my young life.
The sisters are such friends in the book. It strikes me the loss of a friend when you're that young. I wonder if the book kind of made up for some of that bond that you were losing in your friend when she moved.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't have sisters, so it really was an opportunity for me to connect with that sort of female community.
So, Jan, since the 1800s, there have been plenty of other stories by women, about girls, books, movies, television, but there's something about this one. Why do we keep coming back to this one?
I think there are multiple reasons. One is what Camille just touched on. There's a bond and a community of women that is so empowering to read about. Also, they exemplify a real agency at a time when it was hard for a woman to have that. And I think that is also empowering. It allows women who might, for whatever reason, think, I can't. Maybe not even because they think it's a female, male thing, but they just don't feel strong enough to do something. Then they get that sense from a book like Little Women that there is something extra within you. Find it and let that be your guide instead of the people who are naysayers in your life.
Camille, that is so true when one reads the book or sees one of the films. And at the same time, these young women are still painfully constrained by the realities of their lives and their time. Is it still a relevant story to young women today?
I think it absolutely is a relevant story for young women today. I mean, especially as told and interpreted by Greta Gerwig, who brings such modernity and such a fresh set of eyes to the story. I mean, I think we all feel societal pressures as women, right? I mean, unfortunately, I mean, things are different than 1868, but some things are actually not that different.
And there are still, for example,
What do you think
still resonates today? I mean, the world's obviously different, but there are things in that story that still feel as true today as they did then.
I think that if you are a young woman who declares that you're not going to marry, I think you're going to get some pushback. You're going to get it from your friends. You're going to get it from your family. And that's something that very much is central to the story of Little Women.
So let's talk about marriage for a minute. I'm going to play a little bit of sound here. This is Amy March, who's played by Florence Pugh. She's speaking with Lori, the friend of the family, played by Timothy Chalamet, a childhood friend of hers, and she's talking about Amy's desire to marry Rich.
Well, I believe we have some power over who we love. It isn't something that just happens to a person.
I think the poets might disagree.
Well, I'm not a poet. I'm just a woman. And as a woman, there's no way for me to make my own money. Not enough to earn a living or to support my family. And if I had my own money, which I don't, that money would belong to my husband the moment we got married. And if we had children, they would be his, not mine. They would be his property. So don't sit there and tell me that marriage isn't an economic proposition, because it is. may not be for you, but it most certainly is for me.
Jan, there's so much there, and I want to come back a little later to the question of Amy herself, who I think is different in this film than in some of the other adaptations. But there's a story being told there about what freedom women didn't have at the time, and yet Amy's kind of owning what she can of that. Is that part of the core message of this story? Is it why it still resonates with people today?
You mean the idea that you face the limitations, but you find how to work within them and grow from that. Yes, exactly. I think that's a very good example of that. Now, today, women have progressed from what Amy was expressing in that piece. But there are so many ways that women are subtly still in the same boat that Amy was describing. They really are. Small ways often, but I could give examples, and I don't think we have time here today, but I can think of things in my own life when I think somebody would not even notice the subtle kind of put down almost that, oh, well, don't worry your pretty little head about it attitude. And that's demeaning. And you have to understand that it's happening, but don't let it define you.
Camille, you were nodding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that what Little Women really offers is some different models for how to be a woman in the world and how to operate within those confines.
Let's take that and let's turn that to the listeners. What Camille just said, have you learned anything about how to be a woman in the world today from Louisa May Alcott, from her characters, from the story of Little Women, or this new, I think quite edgy and modern adaptation that Greta Gerwig has put in place and is in the theaters now? 1-800-423-8255. We've got Kathleen from Brewster on the line. Kathleen, go ahead.
Hi. I saw the movie recently with my 30-something son, 30-something nephew, and 40-something stepdaughter. And all of us loved it, which was, first of all, a miracle. But it was, to me, it's not only about artistic expression for women that I still think is really relevant today versus like a domestic role. But the other thing that occurred to me was I read that book when I was about 12 years old, and it was the first book that addressed sibling loss. And I remember thinking, oh my God, this is the first time I've heard anyone address, I had lost a sister just a couple of years before, and it was the first time from anyone's voice of a sibling that gave voice to what that loss is like. And so it was a moving experience for me to see it. We all cried throughout it. Even my 30-something-year-old son was like, that was really, really relevant and moving and beautiful.
Kathleen, thank you for sharing your call. And I'm sorry that you lost your sister. And I'm glad that this was a story that gave you a way to express or feel seen in that loss. What are some of the other ways, Jan, that this story sees people?
Oh, I think they are myriad. I think for one thing, the relationships, not only amongst the sisters, but with friends, and the romantic relationship that Laurie tries to have with Joe. And I thought Greta dealt with it beautifully and showed much more of the conflict that I think was realistic. Those are complicated parts of life. And if you read the way Louisa is describing them in Little Women and some of her other works as well, you start to understand that it's okay for things to be complicated. It's okay to not understand quite where you're going, but don't shy away. Lean into it is sort of the modern way people talk about it today. I think Louisa's a great advocate of leaning in and not being afraid. You just go for it and see where it takes you and then follow what your own life is really leading you to.
Now, Camille, at the same time, one thing that we do not see in the story in any of the films is anyone of color. Mm-hmm. This is a white story about a white family in a white community at a white time. Are there messages that are relevant and helpful or important to people of color and young women of color today? And how do we draw those out effectively for this generation?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that's an important question. And it's a conversation that I've been having with a lot of my friends around this story and about this film. So firstly, I appreciate that Greta did give a woman of color a speaking role to help sort of set the tone for a reminder. The Civil War is happening, and race is very much at play in the world. And I appreciate that she didn't try to ignore that. But I also think that this story is so historically situated within a specific time. And I'm okay with the world that Louisa May Alcott and Greta Gerwig put forth. And I think that the struggles are universal enough that everyone can relate to it. I mean, I am a woman of color, a queer woman of color, and I have loved this story for most of my life.
So I want to pick up on another theme that you mentioned there, which was sort of the world that they put forth. One of the things that is remarkable, Jan, is this movie feels like it takes place in Concord. And it feels like Concord and their neighborhood, their environment, is another character in the film. Is it the case, it's my impression that it is the case, that Orchard House was much more involved in this filming and that this adaptation had great fidelity to the local community and the local aspects of the story. Is that true?
That is true. Greta Gerwig came to Orchard House 3 times with various behind-the-scenes people, Jess Gonscher, the production designer, being one of them, and they had so many questions. Then she brought the entire cast through, and they had questions about the actual Alcott family members who were the underpinnings, the models for the marches, and they wanted more and more information. They were so interested in authenticity, and that really is just exactly what you talked about. It's the house itself is almost a character, the town is almost a character, and they wanted that authenticity.
And do you think they got it right?
Yes, I do.
One of the things that struck me is the fact that they actually rebuilt the facade of Orchard House elsewhere in Concord.
It wasn't just the facade. Jess Gonscher got the floor plans from me, paint colors. It was a full house. I was an extra in that scene. You could walk all the way around. You could go inside and walk up the stairs. They built the entire Orchard House, and he did it beautifully. I was so impressed by that.
That's
because
amazing.
The Lexington Road, which is the real situation for Orchard House, is too noisy. It would have been very difficult to really try to use that.
Let's take another call. We've got Sharon from Jamaica Plain on the line. Hi, Sharon. What's on your mind about Little Women?
Hi. Well, I had very high expectations going into it. But I have to say it seemed a little Hollywoodish to me. And
tell us why.
You know, everybody was beautiful. All the clothes, even though they were supposed to be poor, were beautiful. It's like, I want that top. And usually when I see poor people walking around, I don't think that way. And I thought the editing was pretty rough also.
Well, let's take
the going back and forth.
Let's take up this question of poverty, because it is the case that the Alcott family was a poor family, and the March family is definitely struggling, although there are several times during the story where we see them bringing their Christmas breakfast to another family or supporting another family. Is there a way we're supposed to show poverty in a film, Camille? Or, you know, is there something that we should... I got lost in my question. Is there something that we should be showing that we're not? Or is there room for adaptation of any kind when somebody writes a story like that?
I think there's some room for adaptation. And I mean, I think we see the March's poverty in the emotions between them and the stress that they experience. And not having sort of the primary breadwinner there, the fact that, you know, you can't have the nice things, Meg is working and is unmarried. I mean, there are all of those pieces of it come together to create an environment for them where they don't have enough. And I do think that the scene that you mentioned, the breakfast scene, does a lot of work in establishing that, you know, this was their one luxury and they're giving it up because they are a generous family.
And Jan, is there anything you would add to that?
Well, I think that the background that Louisa May Alcott gives to the March family is that they used to have funds, they used to have money, and they have relatives who do. And the real Alcott family experienced the kind of thing where some wealthier relative would give them hand-me-downs that could make them really quite a respectable-looking family. They weren't ragged, even when they were struggling. So that is maybe a stereotype that we have today, that if you're poor, you're going to look poor. Some people who are really struggling look pretty darn good.
All right, so there's one more thing I want to make sure that we get, just because I'm the host and this one spoke to me, so we're going to make sure we get to it. This is a moment between Marmee, and Joe that I think tells us actually a little bit about the mother. Here we go.
I get in a passion. I get so savage. I could hurt anyone, and I'd enjoy it.
You remind me of myself.
But you're never angry.
I'm angry nearly every day of my life.
You know, there's a mother and a daughter there. The daughter saying, you know, I have trouble controlling my emotions. And then we get this window for a moment into the mother, who so often is this magnanimous, ever-loving backdrop, who says, I'm angry every day of my life. And for me, that maybe it's because now I'm watching it as a mom and I used to engage this story as the girl, right? But it was really striking to me that we were giving the mother a voice in that way. Did that resonate with either of you?
Definitely. I think one thing that is clear with the real Marmee, Mrs. Olcott, and also this one in the movie, is that this is a woman who has opinions. And a lot of what she sees in the world is angering. You do not like to see the kind of disrespect of women or the racism, you know, and this is during the Civil War. There's a horrible divide in the country. All of that would make a person angry if they're really stopping and thinking about it.
So, Camille, last word for you. Is there any other theme that we haven't talked about that really speaks to you about the book or this film in particular?
So the scene in the movie where Meg is talking to Joe about her choice to be a homemaker, to be a wife, and to be a mother. And she says, you know, just because my choices, my dreams are different than yours doesn't mean that they're less important. And I think that that's choice feminism. That's super modern take.
So that's Camille Washington. She hosts culture podcast The Unfriendly Black Hotties. Thanks for joining us today. And Jan Turnquist, the executive director of Louisa May Alcott's Orchard House. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, Jamie Bologna, and Walter Withman. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering, and I hope you'll join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.